Penwilts, in the heart of the Brecon Beacons National Park, was once a thriving industrial village, full of life and activity, before its fortunes changed dramatically. Here, three of those who lived as children in Penwilt talk about the unique community of the village and how they found entertainment in the mountains.
Phil Lewis, I was born in 1928, up in the mountains. There were 33 families in Inishpeak living in Penwilt, 33 families, and, you know, the average family was about five, I suppose. And then a lodger, I mean, there were 200 or 300 people living there, you know. So it was quite a big community. But there was no one who didn't know. Oh, God, no, you knew everybody, you know. And knew their business as well.
Well, I'm Hubert Bengley. I was born in Penwilt. My grandmother kept the pub. We had a post office, or Phil's mother ran the post office for a while after the original woman gave it up. Hannah, Auntie Hannah we called her, but she wasn't our auntie, she wasn't our auntie, but we all called her Auntie Hannah. Oh yeah, she was a pretty shrewd businesswoman.
Well, my name is Alan Doyle. I was born on the 10th of November 1944. Mrs. Davis was, this general store was part of her house, obviously. And it was the general post office as well. And she had old-fashioned brass weighing scales. Say you asked for a quarter of sweets. Well, she'd put the sweets in that dish. So once it balanced, you'd got your 2 ounces or 3 ounces or whatever of sweets. But Mrs. Davis had got a very small half-ounce little brass weight tied on to the same side as the dish. So for every 2 ounces or 4 ounces, she gained half an ounce. But my aunt Margaret, or Maggie as she was known, she didn't take no messing. And the first thing she'd do, she'd say, "Hannah, you can take that weight off there straight away. I'm having the full measure, please." And she would. She didn't take this, it was tied on with a little bit of string. She'd undo it and take it off. Because my aunt knew her well, and she didn't take no messing.
Initially, it was the village school down in the, not in the village of Penwilt, down in the valley, Cashwin, and that school had two little classrooms up to the age of about 11 or 12.
And how did you get to the school?
Well, it varied. In the spring and summer, we walked over the mountains. It's about a mile and a half, or, you know, maybe slightly less. But no path, I think, or just, you know, whatever. You walked where the sheep had walked. And down to the school. In the winter term, we had Mr. Davis from the Bompt farm had a car. He had two cars. And he was contracted to get us from Penwilt, only the Penwilt, to take them to school. I should think we were about 12 in the car. And when something went wrong with the car, he bought his funeral car instead, which was a magnificent machine. It was maroon and black, I always remember. And you were hardly allowed to speak in it, actually, let alone do anything. It was superb. And I'm sure he regretted having to use it for these little boys, little girls as well.
You know, the whipper-in, the school attendance officer. That's what they were called, whipper-ins. He was a guy, Tom Rees Joseph, remember him well. Everybody was dead scared of him. They said, "Of course, the whipper-in's coming here," and the kids hadn't gone to school. He was a guy with one arm. He'd lost his arm in the war. But he didn't live in Penwilt. He lived down miles away. His kids had missed school for a few days. He'd be coming. People knew. People were telling each other, "Well, the whipper-in's coming, lock the door. Don't answer the door."
What would happen if the children were there and he found them?
Oh, no, I can't imagine him ever finding them. They were well locked, well hidden away.
in this one street called Powell Street, there was a little room which was called the Mission, the Mission Hall. It was, in fact, only two of the rooms of the one of the houses knocked together, and it held, at a push, 40 people, at a real push. And in there, everything happened. Everything happened. Sunday school was held there. Sewing classes, knitting classes. My mother, who was a very accomplished accompanist, piano, she did, and she used to teach music at home, but then organised concerts in this little mission hall. We used to have, in the winter, concerts quite often, you know. The same performers, as a rule, doing the same thing. She used to be playing the piano. I learned to play the violin badly. Strangely, in a village of, you know, 30 families, there were two grown-up men who played the violin. And they encouraged me to play as well when I got to grammar school. So the three of us, we used to be sort of like a travelling band. We used to go to different chapels playing for the hymns. Yeah, everything happened there, and it was the heart.
And then once a year they had the Harvest Festival, and people would all contribute stuff, and then on the Monday night there'd be an auction sale. I remember I always used to go and try to buy the pomegranates, because I'd never seen pomegranates, never saw pomegranates anywhere else.
Did you ever manage to buy them?
I did indeed, very often. The mission, yeah.
If we went to church, we always had to go to Castlewin Church, which was down in the valley, and we used to walk down over what was called the Task. From the village, you walked over past the railway station, and there was a pathway that went up the side of the post office and general stores that went right over towards the, looking down into the Swansea Valley. And then we walked down this big hill, grass, just a pathway, grass bank, and we all used to walk to Catherine Church. When they finished the Sunday school at the Mission Hall, I've even walked down as a group of children to go to Sunday school.
So you'd have Sunday school and then more Sunday school.
This was when the Mission Hall finished. We used to walk down the Task, go to Sunday school, come out of Sunday school, walk back up the hill, have tea, and then in the evening, if there was a special service on, you were off with your parents again, and you walked down that hill, and you walked back up again at night. And by the time you got back home, you were glad to get to bed and off to sleep.
So you did a lot of walking around.
Oh, a lot of walking, yes. Yeah. As you go through the station, over on the right-hand side is the place called the Stump, the old pub. There was like a flat field, and in the summertime we used to have like a fun day where there was always games and things set up. And one of the games I can remember was they used to have big grey blankets basically off somebody's bed, I suppose, but they put two or three together and they would peg them down. And what you had to do then was crawl underneath the one end of the blanket and crawl right through till you got out the other side. And the first one out sort of got a prize, if you know what I mean. And it was all sort of games like that that were purely homemade games, really, you know.
I'll tell you about the Stump. The first thing I would say is nobody ever called it the Stump within the hearing of my grandmother. Nobody really knows how it got the name, the Stump. Various theories. The most likely one, my mother used to tell me that when the railway was being constructed, there were lots of manual workers who were heavy drinkers, and they often used to drink the pub dry. And suddenly they say, oh, there we go, stumped again. And that's how it got the name, the Stump. But my grandmother gave anybody who referred to it as the Stump as tongue-lashing. It's Penwith Inn. The board was up. I can see it now. Penwith Inn by Mrs. J. Evans, licensed to sell tobacco, beers, wines, spirits, and intoxicating liquors on or off the premises, 6 days only. That's what was on the board. They were regulars, and most of them had their own mugs. I know there was the foreman of the brickworks. They had this blue and white striped pint mug. Then the old station master, he always had a straight pint glass. And, you know, things like that. They nearly all had their own drinking vessels. It was a bit of a strange community, different from communities 2 or 3 miles away. Although there was the billiard hall, it was a tin construction really, but it had a three-quarter size billiard table in there, and it had a quoit thing, you know, throwing rings round a peg. A lot of time was spent in there.
Were you allowed in there as children?
No, not really. Not really, but I was friendly with the son of the owner, Morgan. Would you believe his name was? I could usually get in there. And of course, we lived by the moon. The moon was our great benefactor. I often think now when I look up here and see the moon, nobody takes any notice at all of the moon. But there, we lived by the moon. Because when the moon wasn't out, we couldn't go out at night. It was pitch black. But when the moon was out, you know, kids were out and about. When it was dark, people used to go around with lanterns and homemade lanterns. You know what? Lanterns were made of a candle in a jam jar with a bit of string holding it.
We had a football team, Penrith Rovers, for which Dr. Doyle, bless him, bought jerseys and shorts for the whole team. Penrith Rovers. We were Rovers because our field wasn't flat enough for anybody to come and play.
What else did you do as children to entertain yourselves?
Things you wouldn't be allowed to do now. Climbing in the quarries, trying to jump on the goods trains as they went by. Putting halfpennies on the railway line, waiting for the train to try and convert them into pennies.
It was a wonderful place to grow up because you just had so much freedom around you. Miles and miles and miles of just rocks, hills, and we used to have a load of fun. Down in one of the quarries, just by the side of Powell Street, the old disused quarries, was a small pond, but it used to freeze over in the winter. And we'd go down there, and we used to skate around on this pond. Spend hours down there, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night in the dark. And the other thing we used to do, there was a small narrow gauge railway line that ran up to what was called the Central on top, because the big sandstone quarry was further up the mountain. The track is still there now. And it used to come around and around the side of the village and into the brickworks. Well, of course, because it was closed, there were still old drams about with rails on. The rails were there. What we used to do, we used to take drams without the bucket piece on, and we used to use those, put planks of wood across them. Somebody would get some oil from somewhere to oil all the axles up and everything. And we used to go up there at night. We'd get a big pile of rocks put across the track, and then we'd all go up, girls as well, and we'd climb onto this dram, and we'd push it up as far as we could, all jump on, and we'd go down at a rate of knots, you know, really fast. And I think back, we'd all be sitting on there having a wheel of a time, and the two oldest lads would have these two big pieces of wood and jam them in the wheels and the side of the dram to try and slow the dram down, and the wheels would lock up and you'd see all the sparks in the dark coming off the wheels. Until we met this big pile of rocks, and we just plough into this big pile of rocks, and we'd sort of all jump off or fall off, and then we'd put back on, put all the planks that we'd put on it, push it back up and have another ride. That's how we used to spend our time, you know, doing things like that. Absolutely crazy. And then slowly, as people moved away, as they were sort of clearing people out of the village because the houses were condemned. I mean, you had no inside toilets or anything like that, or bathrooms. And as people started to move away, of course, all these things died out, you know.
That's the end of the second Penwilt podcast. But there are two other podcasts to listen to on home life and industrial life. This podcast has been produced by Martha Roberts for the Brecon Beacons National Park Authority.